Welcome to the My Canine Coach podcast, a show that coaches dog owners on how to achieve their ideal lifestyle with and for their dogs. You'll hear from Canine Coach Dana as she breaks down actionable dog training protocols, explores current dog training trends, and shares insights from her own experiences owning and working with dogs. Now, here's your host, Canine Coach Dana. Hey, welcome back to another episode of the My Canine Coach podcast. I'm your host, Canine Coach Dana, and I'm joined by my co-host Loki, who is my Bohemian Shepherd, and who is actually going to be the main focus of this episode. He's going to be in the spotlight because there's something he does that isn't a problem, but it annoys me. And I have been training a very specific behavior with him to get rid of this thing that he does that I just don't like. So for today's episode, oh, happy Halloween, by the way. That's right. Halloween was yesterday at the time that this episode gets released. Did you guys go out? Do you go out and celebrate? Do you dress up your dog? Okay, this is like a side tangent, but I'm letting it take us mainly because I love Halloween. But if you dress up or you dress up your dog, can you post those for me in the Facebook group? Because they just make me happy. I did dress up Loki this year. I posted his sheriff costume on my Instagram in case you missed that one. And I got dressed up as well. I have a witch costume that I wear, and I've been adding to this costume every year for the past like 4 years now, I think. So every year I find something new to add to the costume. So it's been evolving and it's fun to add new elements to it. This year, the thing that I added was, I upgraded my witch's hat, which has really kind of pulled it all together better. It's just a much better looking hat. But anyway, if you celebrated and you took pictures, I want to see them. So please post them in the Facebook group. The canine tune-up group class for October was Halloween themed, and we invited clients to come dressed in costume if they wanted to. And a few of them rocked some pretty awesome costumes. I posted those photos on my story the day or two after we did class, but I'll also post them again in the Facebook group so that I can join in the sharing, and I'll post Loki's sheriff costume in there too, so you guys won't be the only ones posting pictures of your dogs or yourself if you dress up. But anyway, happy Halloween. I know it's kind of like a day late, but I really like the holiday, so happy Halloween. I hope that you enjoyed it. But back to today's episode. So I figured, since I've been actively working on training a particular behavior with Loki, it would be fun to lay out what that looks like, and at best, you could gain some insight into how I process and plan my training from start to finish when I'm working on something new. So we're going to dive deep today, and you're going to get a behind the scenes, if you will, to hear how I work with my own personal dog on things. So what's this thing that I don't like? It's so picky and small of me to even care, but it annoys me. And, you know, I got to be honest, it pokes at me. So I'm addressing it. The thing is, when Loki and I play, we use different toys for different games and for different training goals. So depending on what I want to work on, I'll grab a toy that is best suited to help me teach and coach Loki. Or if I want to play a particular kind of game, I'll use a certain toy for tug, I'll use a certain toy for fetch, a certain toy for playing in the pool or the lake, etc., etc. So I'm selective when it comes to choosing the toys that we use so that I'm rigging my training to my advantage. And depending on the toy, Loki will play differently. So if it's a toy that can be used to tug with, usually what I use is a foam ball on a rope, which is just the type of toy that I like to use. And if you're a client of mine, you might be familiar with that because I often recommend that toy to you to purchase when we're working on play. If you want to know exactly what I'm talking about, I get them from foamdogballs.com. And this is not sponsored at all. Those are just the type of training ball toy that I like to use and the one that I most often recommend. So if you want to see what I'm talking about, you can go look those up. But basically, it's just a ball with a hole through the center that a rope is passed through and then tied into a long string. So you have a ball on a rope. Very simple. But anyway, when I use that type of toy, Loki will constantly try to push the toy into my hand or bring it back into my body. Usually he comes running and like jumps at and on me, which I allow when we play. So that's totally fine. Sometimes he does kind of almost make me stumble back and fall over. But in any case, he's really trying to push the toy like back into my body so that we can play tug with it. But if it's simply a ball and there's nothing else, there's no rope or string attached to it, after I throw it, he'll chase after it and get it. But instead of bringing it back to me, he'll bring it to a nearby space and lay down with it. And if I want to get that toy and do another throw, I have to use a command to get him to drop it or leave it, as in drop the toy and leave that space. Usually, as I go toward him, if I don't use a command, he'll pick it up and move away slightly, or he'll just pick it up and not in a way that looks like he's playing keep away or is being overly possessive. He just is a shepherd dog, and shepherd dogs tend to protect and possess the things that they collect. So it's in his nature to pick the item back up and move around with it rather than backing off immediately and letting me get it. Basically, he's like a hoarder, but he has zero problem with dropping the toy or leaving it if I tell him to, because he knows that that means I'm just going to throw it again. Like, he very happily drops it, and his body goes tense with anticipation of me picking it up and giving him another throw. So that's why I say this isn't something that is a problem. It's not anything that you would look at from the outside and go, oh, that dog is guarding things, or that owner and that dog have a huge breakdown somewhere in their relationship. It's literally just me being annoyed that anytime that I just want to play fetch with Loki, I have to constantly cue him to drop the ball, and I have to walk all the way over to him so that I can pick it up and throw it again. It's not very far, don't get me wrong. It's probably like 5 to 7 steps, but still. And he does drop it 100% of the time, which is why, like I said, it's just me being nitpicky, but it bothers me. So I decided that I was going to address it. The way that I wanted to go about addressing it was not by punishing him or correcting his behavior, because in my mind or from my viewpoint, he's not doing anything wrong. He's doing something that is very natural to him. It's not being done out of fear or mistrust between us. He's simply having fun. And to him, part of the fun is when he brings the ball back, he doesn't bring it back to me. He brings it to his own space and lays down with it and pants happily or plays with the ball until I ask him to drop it or move away so I can do another throw. So because there wasn't really anything to punish and there wasn't anything to correct, I was then faced with the challenge of organizing training setups where he felt that he wanted to bring the toy back to me more than he wanted to move off with it to his own spot. Because really the reason why he does that is because he finds more value or receives more pleasure, joy, whatever word you want to use, at the end of a throw in doing that. And he does like when I throw it, so he'll gladly give it up, but he gets something out of laying down with it and chewing on it more than he wants to bring it back to me in that moment for another throw. So part one of fixing this was determining what new behavior I wanted to create. And I had to make sure that this new behavior was specific and clear enough that I could communicate that back to Loki. And what I meant by that is I had to design a very clear objective for him to complete that I could replicate over and over again in the exact same manner so that this objective was very clear and obvious to Loki. If what you're trying to get your dog to do is too complex or too vague, your dog's going to struggle through the training and struggle to comprehend what it is you're asking them to do. So knowing this, I decided that the end behavior that I wanted, or to use different words here, the final picture or the target behavior that I wanted Loki to do was bring the ball back after a throw, drop it between my feet, and back away from it. And this is why I chose this very specific behavior. One, I was tired of having to go walk over to him to go get the toy. So part of that final picture or target behavior, I wanted to include or incorporate him bringing the toy to a proximity of me where I didn't have to go step to get it. Two, I needed a very clear visual target for Loki to meet so that it was very obvious to him when he completed the behavior that I was looking for versus when he was off the mark. It needs to be extremely obvious to the dog what the perfect picture looks like so that any other version of that they can quickly learn is incorrect. So having a target area between my feet gave Loki a very clear boundary of where the ball needs to end up, or a very clear zone of where the ball needs to be. And if the ball is outside of that zone, it's obvious and clear that that's not the target behavior that I'm looking for. And the final aspect of this target behavior or final picture is backing away. I want that built into it as well, because if Loki has the ball on the ground near him and I go to reach for it, usually he picks the ball back up before I can grab it, simply because he's just so amped and excited and doesn't have the impulse control to wait for me to get it. Hence where we have come to of me cueing him to drop it all the time. But if I tell Loki to leave it, which I have taught Loki that that command means you need to back away from something, if I tell him to do that and then I go reach for the toy, he doesn't try to pick it back up. So I knew that if I could build that into this target behavior, I wouldn't still be stuck with that annoying behavior of him picking the ball back up when I go to pick it up. And also, I have done a little bit of work with him before where he learned that he had to back away from the ball in order for me to pick it up. So it's a behavior that I already know he's capable of doing. And he's offered it willingly for me many times before. So I knew I could add it into this target behavior that I'm trying to train without having to train that part separately first. Basically, I had already trained that separately first. So after I had a very clear outline of what this target behavior was that I was looking for, my next decision was to come up with a training plan of how to get there. There were two options set forth before me, basically. I could use a form of pressure to make Loki bring the toy back to me and drop it every time he returned. That pressure could come in the form of leash tension on his way back. I could have him on a long line, and if his direction showed that he was going to veer off and away from me, I could add constant pressure via the line, so creating tension on that line, and coax him to move toward me. Any attempts to move toward me would result in that pressure going away. And any obstinance or attempts to veer off again would result in that pressure being reapplied until he got to me. And training it this way would be a way of using negative reinforcement to get him to bring the ball back. What that means is Loki would experience something that he does not enjoy and would learn through the training process that the way to make that discomfort go away is by coming closer to me. So the pressure is on if he's veering off or if he's not coming at all, but all that tension on that line goes away as soon as he starts moving closer to me. Over multiple reps, he would learn that it's possible to avoid that discomfort entirely if he just comes straight back to me with the toy. And if I did my training correctly, and he does indeed learn that, he would see that it's advantageous or it's in his best interest to bring the toy back to me after I throw it, because in doing so, he would avoid any and all experiences of discomfort. What I don't like about that is that the dog is then doing that as a way to avoid a negative consequence. And I'm not saying that I don't like that because I don't like that style of training at all. I use that style or that method of training very often and with all of my clients and my current dog and past dogs. But what I don't like about it for this particular situation is it takes the gameness out of our play. Fetch for us is a cooperative, enjoyable thing that we do together, and I want to keep it that way. I don't want to add more to it that turns it into a do as I say game. That's basically what I have right now, actually, is a game that is half or probably a little bit more than half fun and enjoyment and cooperation. And the other side of it is listening to commands in order to make the game keep going, as in when I have to cue him to drop it or leave the toy. Games for Loki and I are things that we do simply for the sake of enjoying doing them. So I don't like the idea of adding aspects to it that require compliance. What I would prefer is that Loki equally enjoys bringing the toy back to me as much as I would love him doing that. So that brings me to training option number two, which is to use shaping. And this is why I also thought this would be a good podcast episode for you all to join in on, because we haven't talked about shaping yet in any of our other prior episodes. And it's a training method that's not often used a lot, but has a really powerful impact on the way your dog views a behavior after it's been trained through shaping. So what is shaping? First of all, there are many different titles for shaping. One of the second most common ways that you'll come across this type of training is by hearing someone describe it as free shaping. But in any iteration of this method, shaping is always used in how a trainer describes what's going on. So if you hear that word, you know we're talking about this specific training method. The easiest way I find to explain shaping is actually by explaining it in contrast to luring, which is another training method. And it's typical that trainers will use either of these methods depending on the behavior that they're looking to achieve and the impact they're looking to make on the dog once the behavior is solidified. When you're using luring to train a dog or to teach a dog something new, that dog is actively pursuing something, and it is in that pursuit that they end up achieving the desired behavior. The two most common items that a dog pursues when we're luring are food or a toy. So to give you an example, when I'm going to do sit, and I know that I always do sit, but it's really easy to explain it that way. So I'm sorry that you hear me explain sit in every single podcast episode. If I'm going to use luring to teach my dog to sit, I would have either a toy or food in my hand. I would get the dog interested in the food or the toy, to the point where they are trying to follow my hand as I move it to either get the food or the toy. And then I would lift my hand up over and behind their head, which would force their body into a sitting position in order to maintain that pursuit. And when they found themselves in that position, I would mark and either give them the toy or give them the food. Shout out to markers. If you know what those are, you're already ahead of the rest. If you don't know what those are, go back and listen to episode 19. In that episode, I explain what a marker is, how to create one, and how to use one to train. So go review that. If the word mark or markers are a word that's just not ringing a bell in your head right now, go listen to episode 19. Okay, so with luring, the dog is pursuing something, and it is during that pursuit that they find themselves completing the objective that the trainer has in mind. And once they do that, they get the item that they had been pursuing as their reward. So the dog was going after my hand that had the toy or the food in it, but I moved my hand in a way that put the dog in the sit position. So during their pursuit, they just happened to find themselves in the answer. And when they got there, they get the reward that they were seeking that entire time. Shaping is different in that the dog is not actively pursuing the reward. Instead, they're attempting different behaviors to gain access to a reward that they know that they have the opportunity to earn. If you listened to the last episode, episode 20, you heard me talk about teaching both of my dogs to politely beg. And the way I went about teaching that was through shaping. I had something that I knew that they wanted, but I was not granting them access to it. So this created a level of desire and a small degree of frustration and stress in my dogs to find a way to gain access to the thing that they wanted, which was food at the time. What I did was grant them access to the food for doing things that were aligned with my final picture or target behavior that I had in mind, which was going and laying on a cot. At first, when we first started working on this, that meant that I would mark and reward them for just looking at the cot. Once they were doing that consistently, I went back to withholding their access of the reward, the food, to introduce those same levels of frustration and minor stress again, which would motivate them to try a little bit harder at completing what they think is the target behavior because I rewarded them for it last time. And they might move a little bit closer to the cot instead of just looking at it. And when they did that, I would grant them access and reward them again. Over time, my criteria would become more and more specific up until we got to the point of them going all the way onto the cot. And once we got there, I was no longer withholding a reward to look for more of that behavior. I simply would confirm that that's the target behavior by rewarding them when they were on their cot while I was eating. So when you're shaping, the dog is not in the act of pursuing the food or pursuing the toy. They know that food is available or that a toy is on the table for them to earn, but they have to be the ones to figure out how to earn it. When we're luring, we're showing the dog the answer by using the reward to get the dog to do the target behavior. We're basically giving them the answer. And they learn that, oh, it's in my best interest to do this thing because whenever I do, I get that reward that I've been pursuing. When we're shaping, the dog has to figure out the target behavior all on their own. And that's the aspect of shaping that makes it so powerful, because the dog truly believes that they found that answer all by themselves and were the ones who came up with the idea of that answer or target behavior. That level of empowerment, they will then bring with them every time they do that behavior in the future, because those were the feelings that the training elicited when they were learning it. So shaping is a really powerful training method when you're thinking about it in terms of motivation and desire from the dog's side to do the behavior that the handler is looking for. The best way I know how to describe this is by comparing it to projects that you might do at work. So if your boss or your coworker comes to you with an idea or a project and they need your help completing it, most of us are willing to help and are motivated to participate, but usually that's because we feel that it's just simply part of our job to do so, and we get paid for that job monetarily. But compare that to an idea that you want to carry out and become a reality. For that project, you're going to be much more motivated and would likely be willing to put in more effort because it was your idea in the first place. That's the difference between luring and shaping. Luring is like getting paid to do a project that someone else asked you to do. Shaping is enjoying the project for the sake of the project because it was something that you came up with all on your own. Now, don't get me wrong, dogs can have insane levels of enthusiasm for behaviors that they learned via luring. And the way that you accomplish that is by using a reward that they go absolutely bonkers for. So they are so ecstatic to do the project or to do the sit because they find that reward that they're going to get for that so insanely valuable. It's the difference between getting paid a salary of $1 million versus a salary of 100 grand, both of which sound nice and would motivate the average person to do work at their job, but one of them is going to motivate someone more simply because the value of $1 million is greater than the value of 100 grand. So back to my target behavior of teaching Loki to bring the ball back to me, drop it between my feet, and then back away. When considering what training method I wanted to use to teach him, shaping stood out as the best option for maintaining Loki's enjoyment of playing fetch. Because it's through shaping that Loki would feel empowered and proud of his own choices that he perceives he's making entirely independently of me to bring the ball back and keep the game going. So here comes the really boring part of this whole story, which is when I went out and decided to attempt a training session with him to start working on this target behavior. And when I say boring, I mean boring because when you're shaping, you aren't giving your dog any clues or insight into what it is that you're looking for. The only control you have over getting them to do the thing that you want is setting up the training environment in a way that makes it more likely that they would do that thing. So for us, that meant I went out in my yard. There were no other toys available except the ball that we were using to play fetch with. He had already gone to the bathroom, so we're not going to get distracted by that. And we went out to train at a time when he is routinely used to playing with me at that time of day. That way, I'm capitalizing on his programmed desire, because it is programmed, that's why I do it at the same time every day, to play a game. and therein increasing my odds that he would want to participate in trying to get me to play this game with him without me cueing him or signaling him towards the answer, aka the target behavior. All right, so I went out in my yard. I had our ball and my chuck it stick, which is what I use when we're just playing fetch. I cued Loki with my word that lets him know that we're about to play. That word is ready. I then said, get it, chucked the ball. He ran after it, snagged it, ran past me to go lay down with it, and then I waited. I just stood there and I waited. I knew that eventually his desire to chase the ball again would outweigh his desire to lay down and play with it by himself. And since we're shaping, I'm not allowed to encourage or cue him to do what I'm looking for because, again, I want him to think that it was entirely his idea. So I just stood there and waited. Eventually, and I wish that I had timed this, but I didn't, so this is just a guess. But I'm pretty sure I stood there not moving because I wanted that target area of between my feet to be a consistent, obvious location for him. I'm pretty sure I stood there for about 10 minutes before he started trying to get me to throw it again. And during those 10 minutes, he would pick the ball up, trot over to a new spot, plop down, drop the ball or chew on it, pant, and then get up and move to a new spot and then do that all over again. So it was a lot of just watching him have fun by himself while I stood there like a statue. Now, I did have music playing through my phone, so I had something to keep me entertained for those 10 minutes. But it was just a lot of just watching him move around. Eventually, though, the fun of doing that wasn't as great as the potential adrenaline rush of me throwing the ball again for him to go chase. So he did start to try to get me to cue him, basically, to drop it so that I would throw it again. And what that looked like was he would orient his body toward me, still at a distance away. Like, I wouldn't be able to reach out even with the stick to pick it up. Like, I still would have to walk over to him. And he would drop the ball, and sometimes he would be able to break his focus on it and make eye contact with me. But his body language was still very intense on the ball. Like, he looked like a loaded spring that any second he was going to pounce back and pick that ball up again. And this is exactly how it would look before I started shaping. He would drop it and he would look at me. And if I didn't move, he would pick it up within like 10 seconds. But if I did start to move toward him, he would snatch it back up and then run around with it, lay back down, play with it. And this is all just because his drive and his desire for the ball is just so high. It's really hard for him to let it go and to back off of it. But once I did see that he was starting to do that, so he was starting to drop it and look at me to kind of be like, hey, are we going to throw this again? I knew that he was switching modes back into wanting me to participate and throw the ball again for him. So I just waited for anything that was minorly similar to my target behavior. So because my target behavior has three aspects to it, I need to work on one of them at a time. Otherwise, that's too complex of an ask to shape with a dog. Asking them to do a multi-step behavior is just far too difficult for their brains. So when I was standing there watching him, I basically waited for him to show me anything that looked like one of those three elements. And whatever that was the element of the target behavior that I was going to work on first. Because I knew that he is capable of backing off from the ball on his own, that's what I actually was looking for him to start doing. I had an idea that he probably would offer that first because it's something that he already knew. So I was waiting for a moment where he dropped the ball, looked at me, and then shuffled away from it, regardless of how close he was to me. Because like I said, this is a multi-step target behavior. He needs to do three things: bring the ball back to me, drop it between my feet, and back away from it. So when I was working on shaping this target behavior from the very beginning, I'm just going to tackle one of those elements first, and I'll pick the one that's the easiest to accomplish or the one that the dog offers first. That way, Loki is getting rewarded as soon into the training session as possible, or as early into the training session as possible, so that the training session isn't so stressful or so frustrating on him or to him that he gives up. Because I chose to work on an aspect of the target behavior that was just too difficult, right? I don't want to do that. I don't want him to feel so frustrated or so stressed out that he gives up. That's the opposite of what we're looking to achieve. What's helpful about shaping and why it works is once the dog finds out that they've completed some aspect of the target behavior, that results in a dopamine spike that motivates them to make that happen again. So choosing to work on an element of the target behavior that I knew he would be able to accomplish pretty early in the training session was paramount to keep his motivation up and his desire to keep going higher or stronger than his feelings of frustration or stress. That first session, when the dog has absolutely no idea what it is that you're asking them to do because they've never been set up like this before and you're not giving them cues, that's the most frustrating and most stressful session, I think, for a dog who's doing shaping. So I want to make sure that I'm looking for something out of that dog that I can reward as early on in the session as possible. And the way you need to think about shaping when you're planning out your training sessions is to think of it in building blocks. Your job as the handler or the trainer is to identify small steps that the dog can take toward eventually completing the target behavior, and you want to reward each of those small steps along the way. So my first step was to reward Loki for dropping the ball and backing away from it. For this first session, he did that 2 times in a half hour time period. So those 2 times took up about 30 seconds. So for a good half hour, I just stood there not moving, listening to music, waiting for him to back off of this ball. And I know that I've been talking this whole time about frustration from the dog's point of view, but shaping is very frustrating on the handler, especially if you have a low capacity or tolerance for patience. And this is because it's very difficult to restrain yourself from gesturing or talking to your dog in any way that would lead them to the answer while it's taking your dog a half an hour to do the very first step. That doesn't mean every time you shape, it's going to take your dog a half hour to get them to do that very first step of the target behavior. There are plenty of ways that I could have set this up better so that Loki's options for choosing other things were more restricted, and therefore he likely would have gone to that first step of backing away from the toy a lot faster. But I didn't set it up that way, so it took the time that it took. But when he did drop the toy and back away from it, I marked immediately, which just let him know that that was the thing that I was looking for. He then got all excited because we just went from standing around doing nothing to me telling him that I was going to reward him. And I picked up the ball and gave him a giant throw as a reward, which made him super happy. And then I stood around for another 15 minutes before he did the same behavior again, which I marked, picked up the ball, threw it. And on his way back, I gave him his cue, which means that we're all done playing. And we're all done working on anything, which is I just say, all done. And then we just hung out. So in 45 minutes time, we got 2 successful reps in that first session. And the reason why I ended it there was because I was at my capacity for patience, which is very important to be aware of. And secondly, 2 is enough for session number 1, especially as in 2 successful reps, especially when that first session is ended on such a successful rep. And that's the key for shaping. The dog needs to leave the session with a last memory of doing the target behavior so that the next time you set up a session, the dog's most recent memory will be of doing that building block step of the target behavior, and you'll have better odds of the dog doing it again earlier on in the next session. Now, for the next few sessions, I'm going to speed through my details of what happened at each session and how long things took. And I'm just going to explain the layers of the building blocks that I worked on to get Loki to do the final target behavior. So for my next session, my criteria was to start at the same building block that we left off on in the first session, which was to back away from the toy. So at bare minimum, Loki needed to do that before I would mark and reward him. Loki started doing that in the beginning of this session. He did it twice, which told me that he was clear in his head about what it was that I was looking for. And if I kept rewarding that building block, I would just solidify that that was the final target behavior. But that's not the end product that I'm looking for, and I don't want to confuse Loki. So I started to not reward him when he simply dropped the toy and backed away. This introduced a new level of frustration and stress on Loki because all of a sudden, the thing that he thought was the answer was no longer the answer. But he was still motivated to find the answer because it had been working. So this resulted in him trying a little bit harder and experimenting a little bit. On one attempt of his experimenting, he was closer to me, which was basically the next phase of what I needed to teach. I already had taught the back away part, so now I needed to get him closer to me so I could work on getting him to drop it between my feet. So there was this one attempt where he was laying behind me and he happened to be closer than he had been on previous reps. He dropped the toy and he backed away, but I didn't reward it because I didn't want him to think that being behind me was in bounds for this behavior that I was looking for. I wanted very early on to show him that behind me or being behind me was not part of the accepted answers. That's out of bounds if you're talking about sports. You're not in bounds, you're not in play. So as much as it pained me because he was closer to me, I couldn't reward it. But eventually he did drop the ball and back away from it closer to me than he had been doing. So I marked and picked the ball up and threw it and we had a party. So this is when I started to work on shaping proximity. He knew that he had to drop the ball and back away from it. So now I was starting to show him that I needed a little bit more from him. And what I needed was for him to be a little bit closer. I still, of course, had to walk over to him and pick the ball up. It wasn't like he was right on top of me, but I also wasn't walking as far as I was before. And over the next few sessions, I started decreasing that distance between him and I by withholding my marker and rewarding for reps that were too far and waiting out for ones that came in a little bit closer. And that's what those next few sessions looked like. I just wouldn't reward for any attempts that he made that were beyond a distance that he had already shown me he was capable of coming in close to me to. But I would reward distances that were the same as the last session when I started a new one. And then I would quickly move to only rewarding distances that beat that prior distance, aka they were a little bit closer. And I'm going to pause here in telling how this whole target behavior training worked out so that I can explain how frustration and stress works when you're doing shaping and why they're necessary. What happens when we're shaping is the dog becomes convinced that a certain action is the answer, but then all of a sudden that answer stops working. And why we do that, the way that I typically explain this to my clients is by explaining it with an analogy of turning on your TV. So at some point in your life, you learned that if you push the button on your remote, your TV would turn on. And over many trials, that outcome proved to be true to the point where you no longer guessed whether pushing the button would turn the TV on. It just became a fact to you. But one day you picked up the remote, you pushed the button, and the TV didn't turn on. At that moment, you were surprised because what you expected to happen didn't. And now you're experiencing very low levels of frustration or stress because you are now in a learning mindset. You're attempting to then figure out why it didn't work and then also figure out how to make it work. Most people in that moment, the next thing that they would do would be to try the same behavior again to just see if it was a fluke. Loki had been doing that once he thought that the backing away from the toy was the only thing that I was looking for. But the session where he did that and I didn't pick it up, he tried to do that again because to him, he's like, perhaps that was just a fluke last time that I didn't go pick it up for him. If pushing the button on the remote doesn't turn on your TV the first time, you're just going to try and do it again the second time and just see, hey, maybe it just was a weird occurrence. Let me just try this again. I know that this should work. When you do it that second time and it still doesn't turn on your TV, your frustration and your stress are going to go up a little bit, which motivates you to try and figure out how to get this darn remote to work. And most people would try to experiment to get the TV to turn on. Depending on who you are, you might try a variety of things. You might try pushing the button harder or pushing the button down and holding it for longer, holding the remote more level with the TV, moving toward the TV. All of these behaviors are you experimenting with trying to find the answer. And if one of them turned the TV on, the next time you went to turn on the TV and pushing the button didn't work, you would then do this multi-step version of what you learned to do the last time, which perhaps was the move closer to the TV and then push the button option. So this is my human analogy of explaining how shaping works and what role frustration and stress have in this process of getting the person, or in our case, the dog, to work harder at finding the answer. And that analogy, the only time that frustration or stress would be too much would be if everything you tried didn't turn on the TV. At that point, depending on who you are, you're either going to throw the remote, you're going to scream out some profanities, or maybe you're just going to give up entirely and move on to do something else because you're simply too frustrated to keep going. That's the risk that you're trying to avoid when you're shaping with a dog. You have to know the dog enough to prevent them from reaching that point. Otherwise, they're no longer going to want to participate in that style of training, which is why I said earlier on in this episode, for that first session, I needed to pick a behavior or an aspect of that behavior that I could reward as early on in that training session as possible, because the risk of quit is just much higher in that first session because the dog has absolutely no idea what it is that you're asking them to do. Okay, so fast forward a few more sessions with Loki. We're on session 5, and that was the first time that he brought the ball back, dropped it between my feet, and backed away, which felt amazing because we finally had one rep of the final outcome I was looking for. But that does not mean he is clear about that being the thing that I'm looking for. We need many more repetitions of that for him to reach the level of my analogy of knowing with certainty that pushing the button on the remote will turn the TV on. So on session 6, that was where my starting criteria began with my target behavior. And we actually had 4 more repetitions of that target behavior, that final version of it, bring the ball back, drop it between my feet, and back away. And that is where we are today. So for session 7, if his consistency is there in doing the target behavior, I'm going to start adding in the name of my cue, because even though I don't want this to be a command that I have to give him in order for us to play this game together, I do want to have it on cue in case I ever want to use it to get him to bring me something and drop it at my feet and back away. You never know. I do have a cue in mind, but if you have an idea for what you would call this, I'm interested to hear your guys' ideas. Some of y'all are really creative, and I tend to name Loki's commands as things that are not common. Like his recall cue, instead of it being come, his cue is back. And his cue to drop something instead of like drop it or out. Those are like the most 2 common ones that I hear. His cue is actually mine. I just like having uncommon cues from most other dogs, because in the off chance that I'm working with another dog around Loki, I don't want Loki to mistake any commands that I give the dog that I'm working with for commands that I'm giving him. So if you have a fun, unique command that you would call this behavior, I'm interested to hear what it would be. Post that in the Facebook group for me, and then I'll reveal in there what I'm thinking of calling it, but maybe you guys will come up with something better and I'll change it. But anyway, that's shaping, if that's something that you've never heard of before. That's how I'm using it right now with Loki. It has its benefits and its drawbacks, like we talked about. The biggest drawback being that you have to be so on it with how you're setting up the training and rewarding your dog for those building blocks up to the target behavior. You also need to make sure that you're not pushing that dog too far to the point where they give up. It's a training method that really requires you to have a skill set of being able to read the dog. And it's not something that's really commonly taught to the average pet owner. It's much easier to teach a pet owner to move their hand around with food or a toy in it to put a dog into a target behavior. But I really enjoy using it to teach behaviors that I want that added benefit of the dog feeling super empowered and confident about doing those behaviors in the future. I do have videos of the sessions I did with Loki, so I'll post those in the Facebook group so that you guys can watch them. I'll try to title them based on what session we're in. I think I only really filmed sessions 5 and 6. I might have some footage of the first session, But the training became really repetitive and boring, trying to get Loki to just be a foot closer to me each time. And I didn't want to keep filming that over and over again. So I'll post some of those videos in the Facebook group so you guys can watch. If you're not in the Facebook group yet, the link to the group is in the show notes down below. So that's how you can get in there and you can connect with some other cool dog people, ask questions, post training videos, make friends, etc. It's a cool place. If you'd like to get in touch with me about training or to give feedback or ask a question, the best way to do that is by visiting my website, mycaninecoach.com, and requesting a consult. Or you can send me an email at caninecoachdana@gmail.com. Both of those are listed in the show notes for you. If you want a direct connection to me, you can subscribe to the email list via my website. That way you get updates from all things Canine Coach. You get training tips, alerts when episodes drop. And for my email list people, I send a newsletter in the middle of each month that recaps all the major points of that month's podcast episode. So you don't have to go back and listen to the full episode to review all the highlights. You can just read the email. So jump on that if you want those. But most importantly, please like and write a review to help my show grow. That's the best way that you can support it. That's it for this episode. I'll see you guys next time. Loki and I are going to go do some shaping.